Good morning and welcome to the Project Joy Radio Show. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Here was our assignment from yesterday. If you think that you know much, you know little. Here's a Zen story that perfectly captures this quote. A wise Zen teacher was walking on the mountain pass with one of his young students. The teacher kept silent while the student spoke the entire time of Zen and the mind. After some distance, the two men reached a giant boulder. The teacher inquired softly of the student, "There's a big stone. Do you consider it to be inside or outside your mind?" The student replied confidently, "In Zen, everything is an objectification of the mind. Therefore, I would say that the stone is certainly within my mind." The teacher smiled. "Your head must be very heavy if you're carrying a rock like that in your mind." The two walked the rest of the way in peaceful silence. Today, practice the peace of knowing little. Each time the heavy weight of what I know arises, turn your attention to what you don't know or have never noticed. Record and listen.
All right, then.
Okay, here we go. Here's first caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, boy, I got on, and hopefully it's on a landline, so hopefully the connection's good. This is Brad in
Maryland. It's good, Brad.
All right, Joy. The assignment yesterday kind of reminded me of how ego always tries to look at my practice and think that I'm getting somewhere and there's something to learn through doing something. And my experience of Zen from the heart is really there's nothing to know. It's just a matter of doing the practice, really.
Mm-hmm. Being here.
Being here.
Attempting to be here.
Yes.
Right, bringing attention. Constantly dropping whatever it is, attention here. Attention here. Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. And go ahead, please.
It doesn't mean ego won't just leap into keeping score, right? Well, you didn't do very well today in dropping it and getting here. Or, oh, that was great. You dropped that and you really got here. Right. So it's going to try to do what it does, regardless of how...
Oh, my God. Will it ever?
Yeah.
I'm actually working with my Zen coach right now and just doing one particular commitment just for the practice. And one of the things I'm noticing lately that ego has gone to, particularly for the past 20 years, is always telling me its go-to is to tell me that I'm depressed as a way of keeping me from keeping the commitment. If there's a way that it can get me to identify on that conversation rather than just simply doing what I set out to do beforehand, that's always a win-win for ego if it can pull it off. So as I'm going about with this commitment, I'm just questioning what is depression and doing my best each day that I supposedly feel that way to question it and ask what is going on.
Mm-hmm. So it's a is that so? So
yes.
Well, you're depressed, huh? Okay. Well, is that so? And then looking for what does that mean? One of the things that was most helpful for me in dealing with depression was the question: well, does that mean I don't have enough energy to do this? And it never did. It actually never was the case that I lacked the energy that I needed to do whatever it was that was in front of me to do. But if I didn't question it, the assumption was deep that, well, I feel this way, therefore I can't. And then what I can't do, of course, is any and everything.
Well, it tells me that I've tried it 1,000 times over, and there's no way unless I obsess about it and suffer through this process, that I'll be able to succeed with the practice of which I'm trying to do, which is, you know, eat healthier. So.
Right, but that doesn't have anything to do with depression.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is that story that comes out as a way of when I identify with it, then the egocentric reaction to it is to supposedly be depressed.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Well, sort of. So you're going to eat healthy.
Right. I'd like to supposedly, you know, lose some weight. And the thing I've heard for the past 20 years is, you know, you can't do it. You've tried this 1,000 times before. And you get obsessed on this. It's the thing that ego gets with me all the time. And then I get this feeling that's associated supposedly with depression that it just can't happen.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, now, taking those two apart would be really helpful, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah. You know, as I said, I'm questioning it because what happens is as soon as I get over a supposed period of depression where once the commitments have gone to the wayside, then I supposedly feel better again, but I've gotten – well, I'm not getting anywhere, but I haven't managed to keep the commitments. So it's a – I'm having a feeling that it's a bamboozle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because what would feel better that you didn't keep your commitment? Only ego is going to feel better.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So if you're if you're not trying to take control of your life away from ego, it feels better.
Yes. That's how it's sticking its heel on the door right now.
That's right. If it wins in this contest, then it definitely feels better.
Right.
That's all good to see, isn't it?
Right. Yes. And then I look back and say, what happened for what I was trying to practice for myself? Isn't that strange? So.
Yeah. And so this goes with the quote, doesn't it? Because ego wants to be the authority that knows much. You've tried this 1,000 times and it has never worked. Yeah. That's the way the bamboozle is set up. Well, no, I actually haven't tried this because this is now. And I actually don't know anything, and I'm actually not learning anything in this process.
Yeah. And each day with my recording and listening, I am writing down with the help of the mentor what exactly conditioning is doing as a part of this bamboozle to hopefully expose it. So,
yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, and of course I like to put those in recordings under lies conditioned mind puts forth. So they become really, really familiar so that I hear them the way I would hear them in my head. Oh, well, you just, or no, you can't, or that's too, I want to get really familiar with how that sounds, so I recognize it when I hear it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
All
well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, a pleasure. Take care.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Brad. It's such a wonderful process of inquiry. Right,
yes.
Sherry? That interest in, well, what is it that this is about? I mean, it's a repeating pattern, so what can I see about it that assists me to see through it? And the thing I just loved is the thing you said where it's, do I have the energy for this? Basically busts the abstraction that the conditioning is pointing to, which is I don't have any energy at all, right? That feels overwhelming. But as soon as I bring it down to what am I trying to get done now, there always seems to be energy because we are back to the moment rather than that abstract, overwhelming thing that conditioning is waving around saying you've got no energy for all of this.
Yes. Yeah, so the abstraction is sucking out the energy, right?
Yes.
And as soon as I bring the energy back to now, well, here's all the energy that I need. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might not want to run a marathon, and I have plenty of energy to make a good choice for what I'm going to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they're not even related.
Not a bit.
Yeah.
Not a bit. That's an essential point right there.
Right.
And that's,
it's completely abstract.
Yeah, that's what the inquiry reveals to us, right? That conditioned mind thrives on putting things together that don't have anything to do with one another and saying them fast enough that we just assume they actually go together when they don't.
All right, here's our next caller, Sherry. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is June in Murphy's.
Hello, June.
Good morning. Well, that
Good
was
morning.
A great conversation. It kind of helped me get outside of some identification. I haven't been feeling well, and some of the options that are normally open to me, such as jumping in my car and going to town, or driving myself here and there, or participating in certain hobbies, are rather closed. I'm not able to do those. And I'm feeling, I'm having a hard time seeing the gift in it. I'm having a hard time not feeling really down, not feeling that. Well, I think what goes through my head is that that I somehow deserve what's going on, that I brought it on myself, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, may I?
Yeah.
Or is there more? Okay.
Well, a little bit, lighten the mood perhaps a little bit. It was suggested to me this morning to pick up the recorder because that's one of the things that I get talked out of first when I'm in this place. So it was suggested I do that, and I did that. And between that and that first conversation, I already feel the movement out of the depression and identification. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to feel it.
Yeah, well, there's so much that's important for all of us in that. So, first of all, I was reading something recently, and it was a practice story, and the story was of a child who had died, a playmate of another child, and the child who lived through this came home, and his grandmother sat him down and said, "This happens to everyone. This happens to everyone." And realizing that this happens to everyone will take you out of a belief that there is something wrong with what happens in a person's life. Now, that we could say, whoa, there's an iron-fisted grandmother. And this person, clearly, since he was writing about it as a grown man, found it very helpful. And it set him, in fact, on a spiritual path. that he realized being comforted and in a way that didn't give him that kind of information would not have served him. Okay? So that, to me, that's the gift in everything that happens to us, is it's helping us to realize that the idea that we're going to live forever a life that we choose and that things will go our way or should is beyond illusion. We've slid into delusion. And so when we have difficult circumstances, to realize, yes, this is how life goes. So when the Buddha talked about old age, sickness, and death, and I'm fond of pointing out, not everybody gets to have that progression. Okay? We don't all wait to get sick until we're old. We don't all get to live to be old. Okay? So old age, sickness, and death, if we're lucky, that will be the progression. And that will happen to everyone who is born. So taking advantage of difficulties to realize this and to be in the difficulties the way we want to be in, we could say, the final difficulty, is a tremendous gift for us.
Yeah.
Now, that said, the other thing about what you're looking at that's so important for all of us is the very first thing egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate wants to do to us in good times and in difficult times is take away our support. Take away everything that is going to move us out of its grip and into the present, where we have the opportunity to experience the alternative to that negativity in conditioned mind.
That certainly seems so. That it yeah. seems always to happen that way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And not just to you. Don't take it personally.
No.
It's everybody. Whatever it is. No. Don't. Just stay here in this place of hating what's happening, wishing it were different, waiting for it to get better, but never to say, wow, okay, here I am. How can I be with this in a way that helps me to be in conscious, compassionate awareness? Because that's where I want to live, whether times are difficult or when things get better, which for most of us, they usually do. Okay, when things get better, I still want to live in presence. I still don't want to drift off into conditioned mind and perpetuate the karma that is going to really not serve me when, as they say, the chips are down.
Yes. Yeah. Don't get talked out of the things that I know to be true, the things that have experienced. So many times. Just don't abandon that.
That's exactly right. Because we so want those to be there for us when we really need them. And as we know, the only things that are going to be there for us when we really need them are things that we have a deep relationship with in each moment. If I have a habit of not being present, I can't expect to be present at the moment of death.
Yeah.
It is just silly.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
You got your assignment, huh?
Thank you very much. I have one quick a procedural question with the call. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to end the call on my end. Or does Ashwini do that?
I do.
Okay. Ashwini will mute you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, June. That's very metaphorical, isn't it, Sherry? We will be muted,
exactly. Yeah. And we actually don't need to know how.
We just need
to be present for it happening. Yeah.
Well, the thing that really struck out in that conversation for me is that place that the place of ego, which says it wants comfort, right? It says it wants it to be over, but it resists the very thing that will transform our relationship to comfort, to support, to presence. We want to get over it and get back to feeling numb or whatever it is that conditioning, that place, that zone where conditioning has control. Mm-hmm. And instead of being present to what is, I think someone said in group yesterday, to the raw energy of what is here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what you just said, what I heard in what you just said, that's the whole deal. Is I'm in a situation and I want it to be over. I want to feel better. Well, the way to do that is to be present.
Yeah.
Then the experience I was just having will be over and I will feel better.
Mm-hmm. And hence the resistance to doing the very thing that allows that movement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, again, the thing, that we talk about endlessly is ego, which is what we are identified with most of the time, says, I want to feel better. I want this to be over. But it doesn't. It's mm-hmm. a pig in slop at that point. It's mm-hmm. having the time of its life. There's suffering mm-hmm. in every direction, and it's the center of the universe. So it's getting to that place of realizing what's speaking, what I'm listening to is not me. I really do want to feel better. I want this to be over. So I want to be here with this human being having a great time, which is always possible for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, always possible for us. And that signal to that experience of feeling separate and depressed and down are signals to make the movement to support, which in itself is the transformation. And that's what we're stopped from realizing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, when you said that, I had this image of lifeguard. Ashwini?
Sorry, the computer decided to end the Q&A session and clear my queue.
Wow.
Are you there? I can't hear you, Ashwini. It said that I was unmuted, so I guess I'm audible.
Yes, and I'm here too. Sorry, the system just completely cleared the queue for some reason. So if anyone was in the queue and wants to be back in the queue, everybody's back. So wonderful.
Wow. So yes, I know you were telling me how challenging this particular software is, and I think we all are having an experience of that. So I want to, but while we get you do whatever you're doing there with the computer, I want to finish my lifeguard story, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you're a lifeguard, and you know that what signals you to jump into action is there's somebody out in the water flailing around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so when that happens, you know that it's your job to run down there, jump in the water, swim out, and save them. Okay? If we have the same approach to ourselves, so what is the equivalent of this human being is flailing around? Okay? Caught in self-hate, being told, talked to about depression or failure or whatever, flailing, okay, flailing. And that's our signal to jump in, race down, jump in, and save that person. And, of
yes.
course, the way we do that is through embracing that person and bringing them into presence.
Yes. Well, and a commercial to the blog that everybody should watch out for with regard to that, titled Embrace This Process.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sherry, I think I have everybody back, so I could get some
okay.
one other caller into the show.
Right.
Here we go. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. It's Sherry in San Francisco.
Hello, Sherry.
Hi, hello. This has been such a powerful call. I feel like, really
oh,
amazing.
Good.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, I'm going to take it in just a slightly different direction, if that's okay, because what I've been practicing with, and just absolutely, this is one of my favorite parts of our practice, is that I don't know. You know, just remembering, like, oh, I don't know. And I had the chance to.
Oh, right. I don't know.
Love it.
I was actually responding to something I needed to respond to for our practice last night. And it was so great because there was this ego jumped in and was like, okay, what's the right thing? What's the perfect? What am I going to think up, right? What am I going to think up? Mm-hmm. And thankfully, because we've been practicing with this, there was that awareness. You know, the human doesn't want to go along with that. And I just had this wonderful experience of just setting it aside, and then at the perfect moment, life just said, hey, what about this?
Uh-huh.
And I was so grateful, you know, for the whole process.
Yes, it's a little workshop, isn't it? Life is constantly giving us little workshops, right? So the exercise is doing something for practice. And then you get to watch what happens. So here comes conditioning with what it does to you under those circumstances. And then there's what drops in is, oh, I don't know. And with that, I project the realization that I need to just stop here and allow life to, the intelligence to inform, which you did, and it did. And you go, oh, another perfect workshop. Thank you very much.
Yes. And, of course, what always happens is what life comes up with is so much better than the perfect thing that ego thinks it's going to do, right?
Yep. Yes, and of course the deadly part of that for ego is that you've practiced long enough that you know the difference between those two. There are a lot of people bamboozled into believing that the brilliance that life offers is coming from them.
Yeah. Well, I did too for most of my life.
A long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now,
and, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Let me just quickly, what I was going to say is, I know it didn't come from me because it just came. Like, and then I opened up the email and just was like, okay, go. And I started typing, and there was no doer there is, no deed that is done. It was exactly that sense. I felt like I was dictating.
Yes, yes, yes. You're just the fingers, right?
Yes.
What's my part in this? I'm the fingers on the keyboard, right? Yeah. And then I just receive what to type. It's just the most relaxing, fun, front row seat at life's brilliance, isn't it?
It is, and it's the complete opposite of a lot of times, and this happens, it's happened a lot lately with the Project Joy, where conditioning says, oh, this is hard. We're going to really have to think about. And then it's like, it's always that same thing of, it tells me it's hard, but if I let it go and don't try and figure it out or think about it, it's not hard. Life
not hard
shows up.
Yeah, and it's that same process of, it's attempting to take away from you your supports, which is just breathe and be present and let life inform, right? And it takes me, this process that we're talking about, takes me back to what we were talking about with June. Because in that same way that I'm used to being, you know, physically fit and able to do whatever it is that I want to do, and I don't even think about it, right? And then suddenly I'm not and I can't. And it's a big shock to the system. In the same way, the person who believes I'm super smart and I have brilliant ideas and I can really come up with stuff and make it happen is going to be in for a shocking awakening when they are required to get it that that's not what's happening. That all that brilliance is being given to us. It's not ours. It's not from us. And trying to take ownership of it, we're going to have to let it go in the same way that we have to let go of, I'm physically fit and I can do whatever it is that I want to do. All of this is a passing show.
Yes, 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 yes. It's all,
so
I mean, it's just
doing it now, huh?
I know. I was going to say practicing for death every day, right? Like, it's just that letting go of that identity.
That's right. And so at the moment of death, if you can be in the same relationship to the intelligence animating that you are when you sit down at your computer and put your fingers on the keyboard and let life... Right? There's absolute faith, trust, relaxation, fascination, excitement. What's life going to be? This is going to be good. Yeah?
Yes. And just one last thing, because I know where we got to go. But one last thing is that, and the whole extra wonderful sprinkles on the top of all of this, is that when life is living, there's never any need for reviews or regret or any kind of, you know, like that. So I can imagine, you know, however long I'm lucky enough to keep on living, that the more I'm able to let life live, then on that deathbed, I'll be like, all right, you know, there's none of that regret.
Well, I think you just described letting go karma. No regrets, no reviews, nothing undone, no guilt, no shame, no anything. Just, it's been perfect.
Oh, what a nice way to start the day. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
God show, Sherry.
Wow. I wish I had more time to reflect that, Sherry, but I don't. So here's our assignment.
Okay.
The only thing, and the only thing I would add that is, you know, it's a preparation for death as a way of living life fully.
Yes. Oh,
right?
Yes. Yeah, it's not giving up anything, is it? It's not.
No.
In fact, exactly the opposite. We get to have every bit of life every second.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and it's one of the things that I keep pointing out, especially to people who say, well, Buddhism is the negative way.
It's not this as a way of pointing to what is indescribable, incomprehensible, and only can be experienced, right? But conditioning wants to just go with, it's not this, it's not this, and never turn around and go, what is it?
Well, what is it then?
Right? If it's not, then that's all I'm focused on, as opposed to going, oh my God, if it's not this, what is it? And then you've got all of it. And so just that awareness, it's not a preparation for death, it's a preparation for life.
Yes. And as Buddhism points out, those are the same thing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. All right. Here's the assignment. The only things worth learning are the things you learn after you know it all. Supposedly, Mark Twain stated that when he was 14 years old, his father was so ignorant he could barely be around him. But by the time Mark was 21, he was astonished at how much his father had learned. We can probably all remember those youthful days of seeing clearly how stupid everyone else is, especially everyone older. With time, we began to suspect that while we might still be right, it was becoming an increasingly uphill slog to get anyone else to see much of anything our way. Eventually, we come to awareness practice and find the one thing we can be most grateful for in practice. We know that we know nothing, that there's nothing to know, and there's no one to know it. Today, thoroughly enjoy being a know-nothing. Record and listen.
Oh, what a good day.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Treasure yourself.